The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Greetings and welcome to this Fresh FM meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous On Air. I'm Mary and I'm an alcoholic and I'm your chair for this meeting.
Hi.
We will open the meeting with the preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, organisation or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses or opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The topic for this meeting is sharing our experience, strength and hope. And Anne, could I ask you to open the sharing, please?
Hi, Anne. I suppose that the one thing I want to say today is I'm just very grateful to be here. And I'm very grateful I'm not the only one here. I am exceedingly grateful for the other alcoholics on this journey with me. And I have started going to this, going to these rooms, which was a few decades ago now, but I have met and made a lot of good friends in that time. And the wonderful thing, one of the things that I'm the most grateful for is just for the blessing of watching other people get well, which is just a buzz. It always has been a buzz, and it's still a buzz to watch someone come into the rooms. And I mean, also, you know, there are a lot of people that come in and are instantly cured after one meeting and you never see them again. But for the ones that come again and listen as much as they're able, which is actually not a lot in the beginning. You know, we're pretty fogged when we first walk in the door to AA. And it just takes a while for the message and the feeling of being looked after to actually get inside your skin. And so, you know, the one important thing, the most important thing, is to just keep on coming back. And, you know, I still find that I don't understand things very quickly, but I do understand things. And it actually doesn't matter if it takes sort of two goes or three goes for me to understand them. I do understand, and it's just amazing to watch these people who come in and stay in for just long enough to get some of this message, which is basically just care. You know, we care what happens to other alcoholics, and that is the major thing in our own recovery. You know, it's not about just thinking of our own pain and our own destruction. You know, we're focusing on another human being and watch them come out of this terrible situation that they're usually in and start to get well and start to get happy. And you see them at the back of the room. Don't say anything for a while when they first come in, and then the first time they speak, and then they start looking around, and then they start smiling, and the lights go on, and it is such a buzz, you know. It doesn't happen to everybody because a lot of people don't hang around long enough, but I've never seen it not happen to someone who does hang on long enough to get the message. And I suppose my message is just my own gratitude, you know. I am so pleased that for whatever reason, which I don't think had an awful lot to do with me, you know, there was just a feeling of, yep, this is the one. Well, actually, there was that feeling, but there was also the feeling of this is the only light on in the block, really, because the psychologists and the drugs and like, you know, the antidepressants and what have you, they didn't work for me. I'm sure they do work for some people, but my problem was just that I was a drunk. And until I dealt with that and stopped drinking and, you know, started living a normal life and stopped thinking about my own selfish problems quite so much, I still do, you know. I'm still the most important person in my own universe, but I now see people around me, and I'm able to look after my family. I'm able to do my job, and, you know, not that I'm working that much these days, but, you know, whatever it is, I can generally do it. And I can often help the still suffering alcoholic, and that is a huge blessing for which I am very grateful. So my message is, if you have a problem, look up AA and don't just give it one meeting, give it a few. Just see what happens, you know. It's wonderful, because we don't want to know your name. We don't want your money. We don't tell you what to do. You risk nothing by doing it. You just need to open your ears and keep your mind a little bit open, and just, yeah. The first thing that will amaze you is the laughter in the rooms and the smiles that you see. We're not actually a glum lot, you know. It's actually quite enjoyable to go to meetings now. But anyway, I'm probably rambling on, but I'm very grateful to be here, so thanks.
Thanks very much, Mary.
You're listening to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on air. If you want more information or help to stop drinking, please call 0800 229 6757 or go to the website aa.org.nz.
Hi Louise, can I ask you to share now, please?
Absolutely. Hi, I'm Louise. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic.
Hi
Louise. For me, you know, my recovery in alcoholism and in AA is an ongoing thing. I'm so grateful that I one day picked up the phone, because I knew that what I was doing was not serving me well, and I was hurting myself, and I didn't know what to do to get through that and how to change that behaviour. I picked up the phone and talk to somebody on the other end of the phone that, you know, said they'd meet me at a meeting. And, you know, I found the courage to actually go to that meeting, and it opened up a whole new world to me. My drinking life was a life of separation from others. I never felt like I fitted in. I never felt accepted. I saw myself as someone that had lots of love and care to give, but didn't feel like I was worthy of receiving it from other people. And I kept trying to find it. And when I couldn't find it and I experienced pain, I wanted to drown that pain. And it was a vicious cycle. You know, every time I messed up in my life, I changed my set of people to find people that would tolerate my behaviour, but they weren't good people to have in my life, and, you know, it was a vicious downward slide. I tried finding connection through the church, and that didn't work. Joining different clubs, you know, just all sorts of weird and wonderful things, but just hadn't found my tribe. And when I came into the rooms of AA, I was really sceptical. You know, all these happy, healthy people that were laughing and looked content in their lives. And, you know, I thought, how can I fit in with this group too? But the more I listened, the more I heard people had experienced the same things that I was going through, you know, and they were sitting there, these happy, healthy people that were laughing. So I stuck around. And I didn't get it, you know, the first time. I've slipped and slid through my journey, but I've kept coming back and I've kept getting better. And I'm grateful for that. You know, nowadays I don't actually seek out to fit in anywhere. I've learnt to be comfortable with who I am, and I've learnt how to have healthy connections with other people. I'm learning really good boundary setting as well, you know, and I'm learning that I'm okay. You know, I'm okay just as I am. You know, my higher power is perfectly happy with me as long as I keep doing the next right thing, and that changes all the time, you know. So, you know, these days when I experience emotional turmoil, because that doesn't go away just because I put down the drink, you know, I still have hard days. I still get chucked challenges that I don't know how to deal with. I have healthier coping mechanisms for that now. You know, I can stop and not do anything, and that's the appropriate action from time to time. I can ask for help, which I never used to do, because I never used to trust anyone's help because they weren't giving me the help I wanted. But now when I ask for help, it might not be the help I want, but it's the help I need, and I can accept that gracefully now. I have healthier relationships. I show up for work when I say I'm going to, and I put in a good day's work. I have a relationship with my father. I was able to nurse my mother to the end of her days, which wouldn't have happened if I was still drinking. I've got a relationship with my son now that's healthy. Grateful, very, very grateful to be in this program, and very grateful that I keep learning and keep growing. And the minute I stop doing that, I need to check in, because I'm giving up if I do that. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Louise.
Drinking causing problems in your work or home life? Call Alcoholics Anonymous on 0800 229 6757 or go to the website aa.org.nz.
Harry, could I ask you to share now, please?
Yep, thank you. My name is Harry, and I am a recovering alcoholic.
Hi, Harry.
Hi, Harry.
I was thinking about a few things on the way down here this morning, and the most important thing is we say in the fellowship, came in for my drinking, stayed for my thinking, and that's certainly been the case for me. I'm 33 years without a drink. But my thinking is still that of an alcoholic. And for you sitting at home with a glass of wine or whatever you're doing, I would think exactly what you're thinking. What's thinking and drinking got to do with, you know, how does that cross? And I was to find that out, because when I stopped the drinking, my thinking constantly said, you need a drink. No. It's not the drink that broke the marriages. No, marriage with an S after it. I had multiple marriages. I lost multiple children. I lost multiple businesses. I lost and lost and lost. And the booze took everything. I believed I was just an unlucky fella. And, the world was against me, you know. The universe had conspired. Despite my brilliance, I just did not succeed at anything. I failed at everything. And it didn't start like that. You know, I was just a young fella, my lad, out there enjoying myself, or thinking I was enjoying myself, thinking that I was doing the same as all other young fella, my lads. But it really wasn't until many years later where I got to understand that, no, normal youngsters, they go to school, for instance. I didn't. They may go on to college. I was supposed to, but I didn't. They play sports for the teams. Well, I was captain of the rugby team for 5 years, but then I lost my career as a rugby player because I kept turning up pissed. So I lost the one thing that I was good at and the one thing that I loved. And I went on to lose everything through booze. But the most important thing for me today, as I say, when I was driving down here today, is that I am alive. And I've had 33 years of sobriety. And I've enjoyed all of it. I've had some terrible bits and pieces to contend with. But that's life. And everybody has life problems. And now at my age, I have health problems. And they piss me off no end. But my perspective of that is I'm lucky to be alive. 33 years ago, I was told you've got 3 months to live maximum if you do not stop drinking. Your liver is shot. This is shot. That's shot. Your brain is shot. Your mental health is shot. I could not possibly see. I mean, after all, when the doctor said how much to drink, I said 2 glasses, maybe 3 times a week, you know, I'm just a social drinker. But I think some Valium would be in order, or perhaps some, what are those other things? Oh, diazepam, yeah, they may help, is what I would tell the doctor. And he would frown, and he would give me the drugs, and I would go away and sober up on drugs for a few weeks. And then I'd feel better. And so it was time to go out and have a drink again. Wash, repeat, rinse. And that became my story for 8 long, hard years while I was trying to give up the booze. And they say it's a disease of denial. My denial was absolutely complete. It is not the booze that's given me the problem. It's that bloody wife. It's life. It's the bank manager. It's everybody. But it's not me. And how could it possibly be a drink? How could a glass of wine cause these problems? But it was never a glass. It was never one glass. And as I said at the beginning, I came in for my drinking and I stayed for my thinking. Because if you said to me now, Harry, you're cured, you can have 1 glass, 2 glasses with your family, I would instantly think, why would I want 1 or 2 glasses? What on earth is the point of that? And 33 years later, I still look at people and think, they've left 1/2 glass. They've said something like, no thanks, I'm driving. Or, unthinkable, I've got to get up early in the morning to go to work. Really? Nothing ever stopped me. No, just keep pouring, just keep pouring, just keep pouring. I don't want 1 glass. I want the buzz. I want that sweet moment in life where I am sent up, where I'm having fun. But I stopped, didn't get that anymore at the end of my drinking. What I got was depression, anxiety, fear, anger, and the inability to function as a going human being. That's what I got. I didn't get the fun, I didn't get the girl, I didn't get the money, I didn't get the car, I got nothing. But I have all of those things today, and sobriety has given me back far more than I ever lost. It has taken nothing from me and given me everything. It's asked of me to go to meetings with like-minded people, to talk to other addicts with the same problem as I've got, and give back the little I can to other people that are suffering. And I so enjoy to see people that have been through what I've been through get their life back, get their family back, get a healthy job, get a mortgage, get a house, get a life. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing. It's called freedom. And that's what I celebrate today. I am free from alcoholism. I'm not free from the pain in my bum, my knee, my hip and all those things, but I don't need a bottle of brandy to cure those. I do what normal people do. I go to the doctor. What a strange concept. Good to be here today and thanks.
Thanks very much, Harry.
You're listening to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on air. If you want further information on Alcoholics Anonymous or to find out about AA meetings around the country, please go to aa.org.nz.
Hi Lee, could I ask you to share now, please?
Sure, thank you. Hi, my name's Lee. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi Lee.
Hi, Lee.
Glad to be here. with the people I'm here in the room with today, and yeah, I never know who's listening, so I'm aware I'm talking to an audience that's going to be on the radio, and yeah, of all different ages and stages, and some of you may be drinkers yourselves, problem drinkers, and some may be living with them or friends with them or neighbours or all sorts. Yeah, so I have been asked to share my experience, strength and hope, and been thinking just about the 12-step program, which is what Alcoholics Anonymous is based on, which I knew absolutely nothing about when I was turning 22 and ended up in an outpatient treatment program and then straight into AA in the community in a small town in Canterbury, New Zealand, where I got sober. So I'll just share a little bit about, about my drinking, not a lot, because it's, not very out of the ordinary for somebody like myself who started young and stopped young. Well, for an alcoholic problem teen drinker, I would say, because not every young person that drinks has a problem with it. Many grow out of it. But I didn't. So I don't really remember my first drink. I've got vague memories of being very young and hiding in the wool shed with a stubby and things like that. I've got vague memories of that, but a clear memory of drinking was I would have been about 12, 13 sort of thing. Third form at school, and I was wagging school with a friend, and got into one of my parents' liquor cabinets, white poison alcohol liquid, and then filled it up to the top with water, and I'm not sure if they even knew, but that was the start, really, sort of easy access there, and and then being that age, a lot of young people were getting into drinking. A lot of parents would purchase it, or people coming out of the pubs up the street, and some, you know, brave friend would just go up and ask for it sort of thing. And goodness knows where I got the money, but I was, you know, competent at babysitting and got, you know, the paper run and just those sort of young tween-teen jobs, and got things that way. So that's sort of how it started, and like I've heard other people share, I also didn't feel like I really fit in, didn't feel great about myself, had, you know, problems other than alcohol well before I ever picked up a drink, and alcohol was a part of the rural community that I was born in. I didn't know anybody who didn't drink, well, who was sober, and a big message in my family from someone, a family member who I attached to, was that women don't drink in our family, and that actually wasn't true. That was a nice, you know, positive message that was passed on, but you know, most had different drinking patterns, but that family member loved me, and they didn't have a problem with alcohol, but they certainly lived with it. So they were just trying to protect me, and I'm grateful for that, because I, you know, have had a lot of care and all of that. But there was certainly a lot of trauma, and even though there was a lot of good, and I've learned that for me, you know, a good understanding of that for me is that it's anything that overwhelms the senses. So, you know, most of humanity. but certainly being the alcoholic that I am, I was and am sensitive, and that includes to alcohol. So so drinking that really did nothing good for my system, physically and definitely not mentally the way that I'm wired up. But so I basically, you know, got into it around that early teenage stage, and that was that really. There was a lot of, you know, I didn't know how to communicate effectively, didn't have good strong connections with or attachments with my parents, and alcohol just fueled that dysfunction and made it a lot worse. So I ended up in a lot of states because of my drinking, and it affected a lot of people well before it affected me. And I did end up in foster care, in and out for around about a year. And in some of those homes I wasn't allowed to go back to, mainly because of my drinking, because I couldn't, once I started, I could not guarantee that I would get home when I was supposed to get home. I couldn't guarantee how I would behave. It became very unpredictable. And once I had that first drink, if I had to have one drink, I wouldn't bother drinking. So things like Christmas Day, family events, I just wouldn't drink, because that was the easier, better way, because I knew if I didn't touch it, I wouldn't get out of control, blotto, and end up with consequences. So that's pretty much how that was. But being in foster care was horrible. I was very unwell mentally and depressed, and I hated being out of home and out of my hometown. So to be able to go home, I had to focus on controlling my drinking. and so I learned quite a bit. Sort of quick ways to mature and grow up in some ways. So that was really good. So my next year at school was actually really good. I did really well, and life got a lot better. And did a couple of years at school, and had a baby when I was 18. And after things didn't go well with how I sort of wanted them to, and heard that things should with babies and mothering in those early stages, I was quickly back into drinking, and that sort of eased any discomfort and upset from that. So, and then it got progressively worse quite over the next few years. The hangovers got worse. No longer could I do all-nighters and then play netball and think, yay. It just, everything got worse. So basically trying to be an adult young mum in the world when my emotional growth was really stunted. I reacted in many ways like an early teen, although outwardly I probably didn't sound that way. So definitely some mismatches. But you know, people do their best, and I was out on my own, so I just did my best, and I knew nothing about addiction. And things as they do with addiction just went from bad to worse, and it was causing other people problems. So there were consequences there. And eventually I had to reach out for help, not because of my drinking, but because of other consequences. And it was those sort of outside agencies that said, about going to the alcohol and drug service. And then I remembered I'd been when I was about 13. So what are they going to do for me? However, I had, I'm looked after. You know, I have a faith today, and I'm very grateful for that. So I had what I know now was an open enough mind to go, to our local A&D service and talk to somebody that knew more than I did. And I remember them saying to me, "Why don't you stop?" And I thought, "What?" And I just remember thinking, they have no idea. I can't. I don't even want to. I had some attempts at stopping, but they were very short-lived, because what else was I going to do? It was my best friend, even though it was short-lived, and that chase for that oblivion and those feel-goods got harder and harder to grasp, and just, shorter. Working. So, life just, just became so difficult. And I won't even go into the gory details, because if you're listening and you're a problem drinker, you will know, especially if you're trying to parent, that it's you'll know some of the grotty things that go on. And so on the second offer, I did take up the opportunity and did an outpatient treatment program, and I had to stay sober, well, free from alcohol for 4 weeks. So I made that commitment, and fortunately for me, I was able to do that. And I say that because I know not everyone can. Some people simply cannot. They're just in that zone. But I was able, and I do remember my last drink, thank goodness, and to date, and yeah, and God willing, it will remain that way. And it was the weekend before doing that. And I seen some horrendous states. I was one of the youngest on that. And I think because I was without any mind-altering substances for that time, I was able to experience inner change with a lot of external things around me at that time. So yeah, that was actually amazing, and I'm super grateful I got that opportunity. Got heaps of good memories. So I went straight into Alcoholics Anonymous after that, and that was 24 years ago, and it's the only big consistent thing I've done in my life is keep coming back to these meetings. It's very simple. I don't keep everything simple in life, but I do keep this simple. I have one home group. That simplifies my life because I do sort of a bit more care there, sort of help out than maybe I do at other meetings. I do go through phases where I go to more meetings. But in those early stages, I did go to many meetings. I got support. I got what's called a sponsor, and eventually was able to pick up a book that we call our Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I started to cotton on that people that were staying sober and had good lives and were happy and smiling and laughing and having some good function in their lives, they had a relationship with this big book and a power greater than themselves. And I remember, you know, when I started cottoning onto that, and I went home and I sat on the couch, you know, with my big book and very uncomfortable. And I think things just started to get better from then on. And because I was young, you know, and it was 24 years ago, I've had a life where there's been all sorts of life on life's terms things, the good, the bad and the ugly, and I'm sure that will continue. And I'm grateful for that because I've got this opportunity to live, and I've had two other children since, and I have not had to pick up a drink. And I guess that's my, you know, I've come to have faith, and I'd like to pass that on, that, you know, I've been looked after in this Alcoholics Anonymous enough and guided to literature that I've developed some faith in worldly, universal, you know, prayers and messages and things that teaches me that I do not have to pick up a drink no matter what, no matter what. And I need that. I need that hope because this alcoholic goes down quickly. And I've got a lot more to lose today than I did when I was turning 22. And I'm sure it will be quicker because I'm older. So I'm not that energetic bunny like I was, but that is that faith that, you know, no matter what. So when times are tough, I do very much sort of surrender into my grounding and basics, and I do seek that faith, and I find that in this community and connection. So, yep, I'm grateful, and I'll keep coming back. And, yeah, so all the best to you. Just reach out. You know, I've learned as I walk the way appears, and just like I've heard today, one foot in front of the other, and to, you know, keep coming back and stay in the day. This too shall pass. So, yeah, glad to be free of that upset. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Lee.
Can't remember what you did last night or every night? Drinking causing you problems? Call Alcoholics Anonymous on 0800 229 6757. Or go to the website aa.org.nz.
Hi Sarah, would you like to share now?
Thanks. I'm Sarah and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi Sarah.
Experience, strength and hope. For me, I could spend a lifetime talking about my drinking, which in itself is quite a miracle because I spent a lot of my life trying to hide my drinking and hiding what was happening in my life and hiding what was going on and how I was feeling. I was born into an alcoholic family. My father was an alcoholic, but no one used that word. And I grew up believing that the dysfunction that existed in our home was just normal. My dad was high functioning. He held a job. We were middle class. My mother, when I was growing up, was the problem in our family, I believed. She was always miserable and grumpy and discontent and hostile and unloving and unavailable. And my father was just off doing his own thing most of the time. And as I've grown up and got into my own recovery and also then going on to marry an addict, I realized that my mother was struggling with the disease of alcoholism, even though she didn't have it herself. And I also had the strange experience of my father's drinking was that was actually the only time he was a nice person. So he wasn't a violent, aggressive, horrible drunk. He was a violent, aggressive, horrible, sober person. And when he would drink, he was lovely and great. And that was very confusing to me as a child. And the first time that I tried, the first time that I drank, I was probably 6 years old or maybe a little bit younger. I'm just going around drinking the glasses, leftover drinks left around on the table. My parents entertained a lot, of course, because my father liked to drink. And I got drunk and that became a joke in our family. But it wasn't too long after that. I used to watch people drink and I used to want to drink. I remember having an obsession with drinking really early on. And then the next time that I remember drinking or getting drunk was going to a sleepover with a little friend, and I would have been, I think, probably 10 or 11 years old, and I stole a bottle of wine and I got my friend drunk, and I wasn't allowed back there again for some reason. But I do remember us getting really drunk and sitting, they had a double story house, and I remember sitting on the roof of the house with her, drinking, and just honestly, happiness, like just felt so happy and content and safe. And the only time that I really felt happy, content and safe in my life was when I was drunk. Feeling scared, feeling like I didn't belong, feeling that I didn't really understand people or how I was meant to be was just normal for me. It was just how I lived in my body. And I looked around at other people and thought they somehow knew how to do this, how to do life, how to do it all. And I was always getting it wrong and I felt terrible. And when I would drink, I just arrived. And so as I got into my early teens, I just got hold of alcohol as much as possible because that was not my problem. That was definitely my solution. And I would steal it from my parents. I would steal it from bottle stores. When I was 13 and 14, I was putting on makeup, taking my sister's high heel shoes. I collected around the place bunches of keys and put them on a keyring so it could look like I was driving, and I would just like walk with absolute confidence into a bottle store and act like I'd driven here and I was buying alcohol, and I would buy alcohol and go and get drunk. And I had a little posse of friends, and we would get drunk as often as possible. And by the end of my high school years, I was drinking a little bit at lunchtime when I could get away with it, just to take the edge off, you know, nothing too serious. But I knew other people weren't, even my little posse of friends. They just weren't doing that. So then I was even hiding my drinking from the drinkers. And I had this vague awareness that probably wasn't okay, but when I, having lived a whole life of feeling like nothing was okay, it just fitted in with everything else. I watched my family of origin being fake. I watched my mother pretending life was all right to people when she really wasn't. I watched my father pretending to my mother that he wasn't doing the things that he was doing. I just perceived that that is how people live. They just pretend, and I learned to pretend. So then I was pretending that I wasn't drinking as much or I wasn't struggling as much, and my drinking escalated and escalated, and I tried to do the things that everyone else was doing. I went overseas and did the OE, and I came back and I got the boyfriend, and then I got the husband, and then I got the children, and just kept drinking and drinking and drinking and drinking. And resentment was the cornerstone of my existence. I didn't actually know the term resentment at the time. I was just unhappy and miserable, and people only because people were always doing me wrong, just really making my life hard. I was surrounded by people who didn't care enough for me, didn't understand me, disrespected me. I was always, you know, trying to do the best and the noble one and the loving one. And this was the reality of my life, and I couldn't understand why I wasn't getting my needs met, why people were so mean to me. And then it just started crashing down really badly. Over the course of a couple of years, I started to realize I couldn't actually control my drinking. By this stage, I had two children. I had a child about to turn two and a child about to turn four. And my marriage was a complete disaster. We hated each other because he was a horrible person. And my children were awful. My job was awful. And I was the only right thing in this mess. And I kept going, kept drinking. And I discovered daytime drinking, which was absolutely my solution at that point. It was fabulous until it wasn't. And I would take a drink, and that euphoric, I'm okay feeling just got shorter and shorter. It used to last for a few hours, and then it was an hour, and then it was 20 minutes. And then I would put it in my mouth, and before the alcohol had even reached my stomach, I felt relief, and then it was gone. And then I was just left with the feelings. And I just drank more and more and more and more to try and get back to where I had been. And it wasn't working. And I was also vomiting a lot, and I had started vomiting blood, and I just walked away from that. I just decided to ignore that, not pay any attention to it. I was quite certain that, you know, if I left my husband, left my kids, left my job, left my community, I'd be all right. But I knew that I couldn't do that either. I was trapped by my drinking. And I ended up hitting a rock. I tried to stop several times, not because I thought I had a problem with drinking, but because, you know, I wanted to lose weight, or I wanted to go on a health kick, or I wanted to support a friend, or whatever it was. I was incapable of being honest with myself, and I didn't even know it. And every time I would start drinking again, and I just felt like I just changed my mind. It wasn't a, oh no, I just have to, or a deep craving. That's not how it was for me. I just changed my mind. And I would find myself drinking again. And then I'd be drinking and drunk and going, why am I doing this? Why? I didn't want to do this. I didn't want to drink. And round and round would go. I'd stop, and it would go on and on. And it was in one of these periods of I'm not drinking anymore that my husband came back from work, and I was drunk, and pretending that I wasn't drunk and lying to him that I wasn't drunk. We got into a fight. I crossed a line. I wanted to kill him. He told me to leave. And that was my rock bottom, which is that was the point where I started to really accept that I had no control over this, that I did not control my drinking. My life was out of control. The next morning I woke up, and I could hear my husband talking to my child and brushing over the fact that there was broken glass from the window that I had smashed, throwing a fry pan at him the night before, lying to her about what was happening. And I sat up in bed and I thought to myself, that's it. I'm never going to drink again. And instantly I had this hollowing out of inside myself, and this, my inner voice said, oh, yes, you will. And I ran cold, like every part of, I just, from my head down to my toes, I went icy cold because I knew that that was actually the truth. I would drink again. And that was the moment where I reached a despair that was indescribable. I actually couldn't talk. I got out of bed. I went out to our kitchen. And I just, my husband said something to me. I just shook my head. My daughter said something. I just shook my head. It turns out I'd gone over to a friend's place the night before and divulged everything to her about my drinking, how bad it was. She'd found out about AA. And she turned up at the house and said, I found some people that you can go and talk to. They have meetings. You just have to try not drink for the next 2 days until there is a meeting, and then I will take you. And I just looked at her and couldn't talk and just thought, I don't know. I don't know if I can't drink for 2 days. And I'd never had that honesty. I don't know where it came from. Certainly didn't come from me. I just knew I had absolutely no control. And the night that I was going to that meeting, she came and picked me up, and I had all the resistance was back again. I was just like, no, I don't want to go. I looked at my husband and said, what if they tell me I'm an alcoholic? And he just reached across the table and took my hand and shook his head, because I was the only one at that point that didn't know that I was an alcoholic. And I went to that meeting, and it was, you know, what's already been said before. There were people who had sparkly eyes, and they were smiling and laughing and talking about their drinking, and they weren't embarrassed. You know, I was listening to what they were saying, thinking, you should be embarrassed about this. And they were just surviving. You know, they were like thriving, actually, not even just surviving. They were thriving. And I was sitting there trying to look like I was okay, but I was in an AA meeting. And the fakeness of that was, I was confusing myself. I just didn't even know what I was doing. What was I doing there? How did I get here? What is going on? And I was asked to share, and I declined, and it went round again. And fortunately, I was asked to share again. And I just broke down. I just cried. I don't even know what I said, but I know it was probably the most truthful I had been in all my life. I actually felt like it was a safe place for me to disclose the horror of who I had become. Because everyone else, they were doing that. They drank like me, but they weren't living like I was living. So I was prepared to do whatever it took to get what they had. And I mean, there were banners on the wall with the word God in this weird script. And I'd seen it when I walked in, and I thought, I can't do this. Because if there's one prejudice I have, and believe me, I had many more than one when I came in, but it was definitely God, God and religion. And that's what I thought I was seeing. And I knew I couldn't trust people, so that was probably what was going on. But by the end of that meeting, I thought, I don't even care if it is. If that's what I need to do, I'm doing that, because I'm staying here. And the one thing that stuck in my ears that night was like that no one could decide for me if I was an alcoholic. I had to do that myself. And no one would make me leave. There was nothing required of me to be in this group of people. Nothing, except that I wanted to stop drinking. And at that point, that wasn't even true. I actually just wanted the effect of the drinking to stop. I didn't want the drinking to stop. But I just got to that point where I couldn't live with it, and I couldn't live without it, and I had nowhere else to go, and here I was, and so I was just going to do whatever it took, and I was just going to pretend. And that didn't seem like a bad thing. That was my life. I just thought, I will pretend to believe in God. I will pretend to do these things they say I need to do. Oh, they said, you need to get a sponsor. Okay, I'll get a sponsor. What is a sponsor? I don't know, but I'll get one. And I just kept going back and kept going back. And very early on in my recovery, within the first month, I thought I was clocking it. I was like, I get it. Like, they keep saying a higher power, a God of your understanding, but they really mean church. That's what they really mean. They're not saying it, but I think that's what they mean. So I thought, I'm going to be a good girl. I'm going to go to church. So I did. I went to a church. I found a church. I dressed nicely, sat nicely, listened well, and did not belong. It's just not the thing for me. Many people are. And I was not. It was just not the thing for me. And I thought, never mind, I'm going back. And I told someone that I was not going to, I couldn't do the church thing. And they said, yeah, that's right. It's the power of your own understanding. I was like, whoa. Okay, so it really is that. I'd outed myself. I'd been really brave and said, I'm not, I can't do that. And day by day, I have been willing to believe in a power greater than myself, whatever that is, and to go to meetings, take advice from people who are living a better life than the life that I was living. And my life has changed beyond my wildest dreams. The people that I thought I'd never want to be around, people who don't drink, have become the people who have been my dearest, strongest, most amazing allies and friends, the people who will tell me the hard truths, the people that will lift me up when I fall down, the people who will accept me no matter what. Those are my people. And so I now have this group of high-functioning, hilarious, crazy motley crew of good-living people who do not pass judgment on me or anyone else. And I now also get to experience that feeling of seeing newcomers come into a room broken, disheveled, trying to look like everything's okay, and know that we're all sitting there just going, please just come back. If you just come back, we're going to love you into wellness and we require nothing from you. We just want to help you like we've been helped. So if this is for you or anyone you know, could you please just give it a go? Just keep coming back. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks very much, Sarah.
Thanks, Sarah.
You're listening to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on air. If you want more information or help to stop drinking, please call 0800 229 6757 or go to the website aa.org.nz.
Hi, Paul. Would you like to share?
Hi, I'm Paul and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Paul.
I'd just like to start by saying I'm incredibly grateful to the Nelson Fellowship over the last 15 years. It's been incredibly impactful and positive in my life. So I grew up in the United States, in upper Midwest, in a culture that was awash in alcohol, and started drinking as a young guy, and grew up in a neighborhood with lots of kids, and I was kind of at the tail end, so there was a lot of access. And right from the start, absolutely loved it. It was 100% fun and no trouble. And, you know, looking back on it, it would be easy. There were red flags right from the start. I never drank socially. I never drank normally. I always drank to excess. And but the feeling that I got was like none other. And so I chased that feeling for a very long time. And it allowed me to relax and it allowed me to feel okay. And, you know, I was a pretty capable young guy, both academically and in sports and things like that, and socially. And so I think it was easy for me to ignore the signs that I didn't drink normally or that it could be problematic for me. And I was pretty high functioning, and so it wasn't until I got to university that the wheels sort of came off. And I was high functioning as long as things were going really well, but I did not have coping skills for when I got snagged on something. And so when a series of things happened at university, I just kind of spun out, and pretty quickly, my academic life, my sporting life, a lot of things just got kicked to the curb, and I started drinking every day, and I managed to do that for a number of years afterwards. And by my mid-20s, things had gotten to the point where I hadn't been achieving for quite some time. I'd been actually hiding in university because I could still pass classes and drink every day and not attend much. I found that was a pretty safe space to just kind of not deal with the world. And in any case, I was finally in a relationship that I cared about. And this woman, after a bunch of bad behavior, kind of said to me, hey, I think you should go see somebody, and gently suggested I go see a psychologist. And I thought, well, that seems like a middle-class thing to do, and kind of romanticized that idea. And so I trundled off to the psychologist, and after about 10 minutes of my romantic story about being a tortured artist, this guy said, I think you should go to an AA meeting. And I thought, surely not. But I was playing along, and so I did. I turned up to an AA meeting, and it was pretty confronting, because I realized very quickly, as foggy as my head was from drinking every day for years, I could see that, A, these people knew exactly what my life had been like, and they were kind of telling my story. But they were happy, like some other people shared, and I wasn't happy at all. I was a mess, and I had changed the goalpost on every single goal or value that I had as a young person to meet my to accommodate my drinking. And so, yeah, I thought, well, I thought two things. One, I'll give this a little while. I'll give this an honest go. But I got to be honest, you know, my biggest fear was, oh, man, my life is going to be so boring. What would my life be like if I didn't drink? Because I only hung around with people that drank excessively, because it made me sort of deny the fact that I did have a drinking problem. And, you know, but the strangest thing was, A, most of my problems disappeared. Not all, like had been shared earlier. I needed to learn how to actually cope, you know, with life as it came at me. And I do that now way better than I used to as a result of being sober and learning some of these things in the program. But B, my life became so busy with all the fun things that I used to just talk about when I was sitting on a bar stool or sitting on a couch drinking and not doing. So that was a revelation. And but at the end of the day, really, the feeling that I was chasing when I was drinking was peace of mind. You know, it gave me a very momentary peace of mind. And now I get to have that all the time, or most of the time, as long as I don't pick up a drink. And I had that completely backwards. So I'm really grateful that I have the life today that, again, I could have only dreamed of. And so anybody out there that, you know, I also used to think that you had to be drinking every day to be an alcoholic, or you had to be, you know, a bum in a park drinking wine out of a bag. My idea of what addiction or alcoholism was like was not correct. And it really is more about the impact that it has on your life, on your well-being. And so if drinking is impacting on your well-being in any way, relationships, financial, mental health, physical health, please think about coming to a meeting and giving it an honest go, because it probably won't be what you think it was, because it certainly wasn't. And I've gotten so much more out of it than I could have ever imagined. So thank you much for having me.
Thank you very much, Paul. That brings us to the end of our meeting on air, and thank you all for sharing. We will now close with three of our 12 traditions and the Serenity Prayer. Tradition 1, personal recovery depends on AA unity. Tradition 3, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. And Tradition 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. So I'll ask you to help me close with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM, with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.